Blog Talk Radio.
Sidekick Publications is the newest place for all your martial arts informational needs. My Karate, Introduction to American Wadaru, Martial Arts Guide to Success, History of Japanese Martial Arts, Taizanru Taiho Jitsu, and the new Martial Directory. With martial art master instructors like Michael DePasquale Jr., Joe Miller, Alan Woodman, and many more. Everything for martial arts enthusiasts, techniques, shiatsu, history, all in one place. Available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble's, and bookstores near you. Also available on digital downloads for Kindle and ebook readers. Visit our website at www.sidekickpublication.com and order your books today. Remember, Sidekick Publications, all the action you can read.
Welcome, everybody, to the program. This is Danny Venny, your host, bringing you Martial Arts Talk Radio on Blog Talk Radio. Today we're working on a pre-recorded session with Sensei Andy Sloan. Today is Monday, the 28th, 2013, January. What we plan to do is build a session so we can have a pre-recorded session between two guys talking about our subject matter today is dojo procedure and dojo curriculum. Hello, Sensei Sloan. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thank you for calling in today and helping me build this pre-recorded session so we can air it one night during the week.
My pleasure.
Yeah, so far I have one session ready to go that you and I built about a week ago, maybe 10 days ago now. And this will be the second one that we plan to share with our audience. And I want to thank everybody because our audience is growing. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for your comments about the work that we're doing. Ed McGrath School of Isshinryu has been around since 1959, and he has been practicing the Isshinryu Karate brought to the United States by Sensei Don Nagel. What happened, once Sensei became a Shodan in the system, he was allowed to, under the direction of Don Nagel Sensei, was allowed to go back to Long Island where he lived, actually in Queens at the time, and open up a dojo. And out of that dojo came some very, I want to use the right word, well-trained Isshinryu Karateka. Let me put it that way. When they left that dojo, they went on to build dojos in their own right. And students, that is why my sensei now has black belts that are 6, 7, and 8 layers deep. So over the years, since that first dojo in Jacksonville, North Carolina, and I will give that address again because it was asked of me. So to document that address, we have 220 New River Street in Jacksonville, North Carolina. That's the location that I guess goes down in history as the first Isshinryu Dojo here in the United States. And that was with a gentleman by the name of Professor Ernie Cates. It was a judo dojo. And then when Don Nagel came back to the States, he palled up with Sensei Cates and started to offer the curriculum of Isshinryu Karate here in the States. So now this basically is why we picked this subject matter today, which is dojo procedure and dojo curriculum. Now, under the heading procedure also goes the word etiquette, how you behave, why you do certain things when you enter and exit the deck. What is the kamisa? Why do we bow? What is the significance of everybody being in a seated position, all in a line by rank, getting ready to do their workout now. So since I have Sensei Sloan on the phone, what I'd like to do is share his experience when it comes to how he's been trained, some of the things that is required of his class when you walk in, get dressed, step on the deck, get ready to do your workout. After the workout is over, what do you do next? Bow out, get back into your street clothes, and leave the dojo. Well, there are certain things along the way that you do during that time, and we'd like to talk about them. Because I get asked by parents, how come my child has to do this? How come my child has to do that? So it's nice to be able to grab this little clip, because it'll last about 20 to 25 minutes, and give them something to listen to. And then they'll come back and say, okay, I have this set of questions now. So it cuts down a little bit on time spent in front of the parent, especially when you have more than one parent asking questions. And of course, you want to give every parent all the information they need to put their child under your supervision for the time that they come to work out. So, Sensei Sloan, let's talk about the first part of our subject matter, which is dojo procedure. In your experience over the years, take us through some of the behaviors that you've been taught that are required of a karateka and how you behave when you walk into the dojo.
Well, my very first Ishinryu sensei was Harvey Kennedy in Shreveport, Louisiana. I believe I've mentioned that before, and I started back in 1993, November the 1st of 93. I was a freshman in high school at the time, but I was always made aware that, you know, the dojo was not a daycare center, you know, so it was a place to be serious, and, you know, we could laugh and have fun, and he wasn't a super strict disciplinarian, or none of his assistant instructors were either, but, you know, we always knew that we were supposed to take our training seriously and not be goofing off and you know, do what we're told to do and when we're told to do it, and, you know, if we're told to line up or something, you know, we run to our places in line instead of just walk and, you know, delay the class and things like that. Or if, like, Mr. Kennedy was not actually teaching the class and someone else was teaching the class for him, but whenever he did step onto the floor, that we all would, you know, immediately halt the class and whatever we were doing and turn it about to him, and then we would resume, and or he could take over the class if he so chose to do. And but typically we would walk in to the dojo and, you know, walk along the edge of the flooring. He had some tape marking off the area of the floor, so there was no question where the dojo floor was supposed to be. And then he had it set up where he had a dressing room in the back for the men and a dressing room in the back for the women. And the bathrooms, of course, they're connected to those dressing rooms. And he also had an area that we considered a mat room. We had the mats for the rolling and the falling and stuff like that. And he also had an equipment room that was typically set up for his supplies and things and snacks and things, because he also had a little snack bar kind of deal. You know, you buy chips and sodas and stuff and water and candy if he wanted to and whatever. So he had all that stuff, you know, piled in the back. And he had an area back there as well that you could work out in, and that was typically where new students would come for their first couple of introductory lessons. And then the mat room, also if the class out on the main dojo floor was going too long, then we could start the next class over in the mat room. So we get some of the curriculum accomplished back there, or just some of our warm-ups, you know, and then we would rotate out to the main floor when the other class that was going on was finished. And the whole process of that kind of changed over the years as he renovated his building and things, expanded his business and stuff. He kind of took over the lot next door. Well, not really a lot, but the other adjacent suite, I should say, there in that same building. So his dojo was kind of in a state of flux at various periods over the years. But it was all pretty much about the same deal after a while. He no longer had the mat room and the equipment room, but that's back into usage now, I believe. I haven't been to his dojo in a while. But anyhow, so we would line up, and we would just, the senior student would be on the one end, and everybody would, you know, line up beside them. And the senior would be on the right if they're facing opposite of the teacher. So that would be on the teacher's left, would be where the senior student would be. And we would all just come to attention and bow in, and we would commence a series of warm-up techniques after he would, you know, split us into a couple of lines if the class was that big, you know, and so make sure we had ample room to move around and warm our bodies up and stuff. And then after, you know, warm-up session, 3-5 minutes, depending on the instructor, you know, then we would break off and do whatever struck the teacher's fancy at the time being. We typically would rotate through, you know, maybe 5 or 6, 7 different things. We would do, you know, kicks, punches, blocks in combination sometimes, or we would do them just solo. At Mr. Kennedy's dojo, in my early training there, we never did the upper body and lower body basics in a chart format. We always ended up covering all of our basics because the basics were required, of course, since it was an Ishinru dojo, but we never really did them in a chart format. So, but we would do a lot of the techniques, side stances, side fighting stances and stuff. Sometimes we'd be in a stationary Cienchen position and, you know, do them facing the mirror like that, or we'd add some variety to that segment of the class, and then we'd go into maybe rolling and falling techniques. We'd go back to the mat room, and then later when the mat room was no longer an option, he had the second part, like the second half of the dojo flooring was the mat area, and we would do the rolls and falls there. And then the people that were doing rolls and falls would rotate back over to the other section of the dojo to continue on with another assistant instructor if there was someone there. Then we would do grappling also, especially because when I started, that's really when the UFC became popular, and a lot of people were adding their grappling to their curriculum. And you know, later in the class, we might do weapons for those that were more advanced that could do weapons. Let's see, what else? And then later in the class, we would do a series of stretches. Almost every class we did, a routine of stretches and stuff like that. And then after the stretches, we'd get up and we'd do the kata. And between, well, not between, but right after the stretches, we would do kind of maybe a couple of minutes of reflection and meditation to kind of clear our minds so that we could get ready to do the kata. We would, you know, visualize ourselves performing the kata as best we could and so forth. And then, of course, it would be the time for the kata. And then we'd, you know, spend a few minutes on doing that. And then at the end of the class, he would always, all the students had an attendance card that they should have pulled at the beginning of class when they first got to the dojo. I forgot to mention that, too. So his classes were very structured and organized, and I thought it was very efficient. And, you know, he would have your card pulled so that he'd make sure that you got credit for the class. And then on a certain number of classes, you would get a set of attendance stripes. And then, you know, then you would be on track for your time frame and where you would start your testing. And once you had all of your testing done, then you could get a letter of intent to promote from him, and it would go home to your parents and to a teacher at school, and you have to have one of your teachers at school or one or both of your parents sign off to say yay or nay whether they felt like you should be promoted and you know, give a little bag on you a little bit or whatever in the spaces provided, and then he'd bring it back to the class, and then he would read it out in front of the whole class so folks could see, you know, that you're doing like you're supposed to. And or he'd call you up to the class, you know, to the front of the class if it was time for you to have your attendance stripes added to your belt and stuff like that. So he also had several different incentive programs, kind of like just extra stuff there for, like, we had a school patch, the Karate USA school patch that went on the right sleeve, and underneath that you could get other patches for, like, the demonstration team. If you went to, I think he had to do three, he had to participate in three demonstrations for the school to help bring in new students. A competition team patch was if you went to three tournaments or two tournaments and won a trophy, then you could be a part of the competition team. And then let's see, what else was there? There was, I think, the splits club was one also as well. You could, you were never required to be able to do the full splits in the school, but if you were able to do them, then you could have the patch there on your gi, and you'd also get taken out for a banana split or some sort of ice cream. I never did do that, even though I was very flexible. Let's see, what else? I think there was maybe one more. I think it was the black belt club, and that was if you had paid for, you know, the majority of your lessons or all of your lessons or whatever up to a certain time in the year. Maybe it was a whole year's worth, you know, or 3 years worth or something. I don't remember exactly what that time frame was because I never was a member of that. Let's see. I can't think of really anything else that we did in there. Depending on if it was like adults in the class mostly or some of the higher ranks, then we would a lot of times, when we started the bow in or bow out process for the class, then we would turn towards the Megami and bow that way, you know, to have a little more formality in there. But most of the time we just bowed in to the instructor, and Master Shimabuku's picture was just on the windowsill, well, not really windowsill, but right behind where the instructor stood. So we were bowing to Master Shimabuku's picture in every class, regardless of whether we bowed to the Megami or not. And that format seems to work really well, in my opinion, and I have emulated that to a large degree whenever I teach my own classes. I have attendance cards for my own students and things like that, but mostly because I did not have the good fortune of having, you know, as many students in the class as Mr. Kennedy did. I would just keep track of it. It was easier, and I can have more one-on-one with the students than he had in his classes, but that's just the scenario for the time being. Hopefully, maybe one day I'll have lots of students. And then over the years, I had moved to Texas, and I worked out with other people in Texas that were in Ishinru, and also others that weren't, in different styles. But also, one of the main ones was Ed Johnson, who became my teacher right after I made black belt in 2000, and Sensei Johnson actually trained with Master Shimabuku in Okinawa in, starting in December of 1959, and he left Okinawa in February of 61, and he was on Okinawa for about 12 months, 13 months, something like that, out of that time, because he went back to the States on emergency leave and stuff like that, and was off the island, went to Taiwan, I think, once or twice. So, but anyway, about a year's worth of training with Master Shimabuku, something like that. And he didn't teach exactly like he was trained in Okinawa, as far as, you know, the structure of a class, because he's always said that there were no formal classes like we think of them today when he was training with Master Shimabuku in Okinawa. So a lot of people organized things and added things or ran classes just differently than the way they were done in Master Shimabuku's dojo. Now, I think in later years, maybe Kichido, perhaps, Master Shimabuku's oldest son, he's the one that kind of started organizing the classes more. But I've heard it from Tom Lewis and some other first-generation students that there were no organized classes. And Sensei Johnson had said there was nobody telling you, okay, we're going to do, you know, 10 repetitions of this exercise, and then we're going to go and do 10, you know, 10 reps of this kata and, or whatever. So he added a bunch of things, kicking drills and stuff like that. So, like I mentioned to you before, I was in the position to be in some of the very last classes that he taught in a classroom-type setting, even though he didn't have a dojo for many, many years prior to me starting, probably at least a couple of decades, I'd imagine. But he taught in his apartment. There was like a workout facility there in Dallas. He actually lived in Dallas when I first started training with him, and he moved to Fort Worth, about 30 miles to the west of Dallas, just about maybe about a year later. But in that time frame, when I worked out with him, we would bow to him, and then he would have us, we could warm up on our own for a little bit, and then he would start us off on our basic techniques. But again, we didn't do the lower body techniques in any kind of chart. We did the upper body ones, though, so that was really nice. And we did, I think, probably 10 going forward and 10 going backwards. And then the kicking techniques that we would do, a lot of them were Taekwondo type kicks. Some of them were the Ishinru basics. Actually, we did all the Ishinru basics, as I recall. But he liked to do way more kicks than what the lower body Isringer technique chart was, because he had taught for Pat Burleson, which was one of June Ree's early black belts back in the 60s. So a lot of the things we did were from the time that he was, you know, a new instructor himself, and on through the years that he enjoyed teaching and passing along. So, but we didn't ever do any grappling or anything like that, which that's okay. We didn't have mats to do it on, so that's fine. But we worked on weapons on occasion, depending on which student was on which weapon or whatever. So the class was rather small, and it's a good thing at the time because there wasn't that large of a workout area to practice in anyway, but it was like a little platform. I can't remember how long or how wide the thing was, but it was adequate for maybe, you know, 4, 5, 6 students and him. But anything more than that, and you'd have to, like, I guess, sit down and take turns or something, because there was a little drop down into the rest of the room where all the workout equipment was, and we didn't want to step off the platform there. But let's see, what else? Oh, I can't think of anything else about Sensei Johnson's class that we should necessarily talk about there. There was no walls to hang any pictures on or anything in that particular facility, but that was okay. Nobody minded, I guess. And he didn't. Sensei Johnson didn't teach it in teach counting in Japanese. He always did it in English. He said he used to when he first started trying to teach the students in Japanese, but you know, people would. They thought it was funny, you know, the Japanese word sounding. So he was having a lot of people giggle in the class and about, you know. So he decided he'd drop that, and so since then he started teaching in English only, pretty much, except for, you know, certain the names of the katas or something, you know.
Of course, of course.
And of course, yeah. Of course, he'd keep the Japanese or Okinawan names for those.
All right. So now that basically covers what you've done here in the States. How about overseas? Can you share some?
Well, sure. When I was in Okinawa, I primarily worked out with Sensei Uechi. I had asked my teacher who I should work out in his opinion when I got there, and he said he thought I ought to work out with Uechi. And so since the first week that I got to Okinawa in June of 2008, I began working out with Master Uechi there. And I primarily later on went to the Camp Foster dojo because it was just, I thought, a better fit for me. I didn't want Sensei to have to end his classes early out in town to work out with me, because the majority of the students that he had out in town were children, and I didn't want to be an interruption to his class with the little kids, you know, staring at the big, tall American instead of doing what they're supposed to be doing. So I just decided it would be best if I mostly went to the Camp Foster dojo. But at first, you know, for many months after I got there, I did go to his dojo out in town and the Camp Foster dojo. But anytime he needed me to assist him at tournaments or whatever, I was always there to help him out. So I was his primary assistant ever since I got to Okinawa, pretty much. We did kata almost exactly the same, he said, just some timing differences. And I taught for him on about three or four occasions, I can't remember exactly, when he would come back to the United States to give seminars. One time he even went to Germany with Zenpo Shimabuku and his friend Kunio Uehara of Shorinryu. And so I would help teach his classes or teach them, you know, the whole things, if the other guy that would sometimes come was not there to assist as well. But in Uechi Sensei's class, Camp Foster, I'll just give that one as an example for the first. We would, you know, all line up facing him, and again, he'd have the senior student on the far right, which would be his left as he's facing us, and then we would come to attention. Of course, in Okinawa, he has the yasume or at-ease position in there. There's a big portion of Isshinryu folks in the States, I believe, that do this little step out with the left foot, and they really don't even know what it means or where it came from. But somehow or other, I've heard from several folks that it's gotten the connotation of somehow that you're showing respect to Master Shimabuku by putting this left foot out, and that's not really correct. That's really just the Japanese at-ease or yasume position, and it's like a little rest in between coming to an attention stance and then bowing. So after we would do the yasume and kyotsuke or tension, we would turn left, and Sensei Uechi would turn right, and we would face towards Gushikawa City, or what was Gushikawa City, and that was where Master Shimabuku lived and had his dojo. So we would bow and pay respect to that area, and then we would turn back and face him. And the senior student, of course, would be calling out the command to attention and bow and so forth. And then after that, we would do a series of warm-up techniques. He would lead us through them, actually. We wouldn't always work, you know, just warm up on our own. Most of the time, he would lead us through a series of warm-ups. And then after that, we would do the upper body basics and the lower body basics in the chart format. That's how he had learned them, I guess, and since Kichiro's dojo and then with Master Uezu all those years. And so after that, if it was a Tuesday night, most of the class after the basics was dedicated to kata. And then on Thursday evenings, then the class would be mostly for sparring, and then maybe about 15, 20 minutes of kata practice at the end. And then, you know, if it was kata, depending on the student and what they were told to work on, then it would be empty hand or weapons.
Oh, awesome.
And the class would... Yeah, it was a really neat class. We didn't have any mats in there to roll or fall on, so there was no rolling or falling in his classes either, and he never went through any self-defense type techniques in the classes. But I would show that on occasion, you know, various techniques, self-defense techniques or applications from the kata. When I was teaching his students, I would always make sure that they understood the movement instead of just, you know, you do this because that's how the kata goes, you know.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. That basically gives us 26 minutes of open mic, and that what I would like to do now at this time is just be able to label and archive this session so I can upload it to my switchboard. So that'll take a couple of minutes, and you know, again, I want to thank you for taking the time to share that experience with us, because actually it's very valuable. You can give that little segment now to a parent and let them listen to it. So I really appreciate you helping me with that effort. So I'm going to end the recording, and I'll continue with you after.
Sidekick Publications is the newest place for all your martial arts informational needs. My Karate, Introduction to American Wadaru, Martial Arts Guide to Success, History of Japanese Martial Arts, Taizanru Taiho Jitsu, and the new Martial Directory. With martial art master instructors like Michael DePasquale Jr., Joe Miller, Alan Woodman, and many more. Everything for martial arts enthusiasts, techniques, shiatsu, history, all in one place. Available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble's, and bookstores near you. Also available on digital downloads for Kindle and ebook readers. Visit our website at www.sidekickpublication.com and order your books today. Remember, Sidekick Publications, all the action you can read.
There was an interview that we did this morning with Sensei Sloan over in Korea. He's serving in the Navy. And that tomorrow we're going to play part two of that conversation and take it to the next set of topics, which is also dojo procedure and dojo curriculum. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll close the show. Today is January 28, 2013, and that was our 30 minutes. We'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in.